Ellis Island Front Yard, Boomer Sportsbook, with Ramirez, Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas, James back on the board in our Findlay Toyota Studios, Mateo and Mitchell with the setup here at Ellis. Caleb Herring's coming up. We're going to get into UNLV football. This is not the halfway point of the season, but they had a bye, and they had a lot of time to work on things. So we'll get into what they worked on and this opponent in New Mexico. I'm very interested in. We're big fans of big fella, Jason Eck. I got a question for you, Willie, and I hate to put you on the spot, but how many of the Canadian teams have the Golden Knights hosted in home games this year? Has there been a couple of home dates against Canadian teams so far? Mm-hmm. I can look at the schedule real quick.
I think just Calgary.
Okay. I'm really curious to see what happens with our Canadian friends coming here to Vegas to go to hockey games, because that has been big business for Las Vegas, the Canadian fans coming in. And I think it's pretty clear that of late, Canadians are not coming to Las Vegas like they were in big numbers. I hung out over the weekend in the middle of the strip. I went to a concert. The place was jammed with tourists, mostly tourists, not locals. Yesterday, it slowed down a lot. So I'm always kind of looking out for Vegas. Frankly, I'll be selfish. I'm looking out for me and you and the radio station. When Vegas is doing well, then we're doing well. When Vegas ain't doing well and tourists aren't coming, that's not good for us and our jobs. Or a lot of the people in the audience's jobs.
I think when it comes to money, politics, tourism, I get it. But I think hockey is such its own sort of bubble, if you will.
Yeah.
And that goes above and beyond. It's such a special fraternity, if you want to use that, for, I don't know what the right phrase, but it's such a special brand with a built-in fan base that, you know, the fans that travel for their teams and they want to go to specific places, especially the teams on the west coast of Canada, like Edmonton, Vancouver, mm-hmm. Edmonton specifically, they travel really well. I don't think you're going to see I'll tell you one thing where it's not going to hold back. The Toronto fans that want to come to a little bit of a warm climate to come see Mitch Marner in his new building, they're not going to hesitate to come out here. I don't think it's going to affect as much as you think.
I think it might be the case. But, they don't host a Canadian team for freaking ever. I was looking ahead into next year. Maple Leafs are here on the 15th of January. That's a Thursday. And when they're here.
You can hear it at the fortress.
They'd
fly in the morning, and then they'd hang for the weekend. You know, there's college basketball. There's the NFL playoffs by then. So the sport, if you're a sports fan, you know, and you're from Toronto, the Bills are in. If the Bills are in the playoffs, because they're naturally fans of the Buffalo Bills right across Niagara Falls. I get what you're saying. I just don't know how much, specifically for NHL fans, I don't know how much it's going to make as big of a deal as you. I agree with you from a tourist standpoint as a whole. But when it comes to coming, following their teams, if they want to come to a warm team during cold weather, I think Vegas, they'll pick Vegas still.
I went to see Earth, Wind, and Fire over the weekend. Philip Bailey is a freak.
There was
a while ago, because I'm a really big fan of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and I definitely pay attention as vocalists get older, like who can do it and who can't, who's taking care of themselves or who just is gifted, right? And there was a point where Philip Bailey had to kind of like change up his voice a little bit, couldn't hit like the highest notes that he used to hit. Dude, on Saturday night, he just was showing off. It was ridiculous how good he is. He is 74 years old and just blowing the place out.
And that's the big thing now is these throwback tours, but I saw them right up the street at an outdoor stadium at Caesars.
Really?
In like 88.
That was a reunion tour.
And they dropped the planets, came down. Did they do the planets? No.
They didn't do the planets. They had a great screen with all graphics, old school stuff.
Yeah.
It was tremendous, man. They're so good.
Did you groove tonight?
I grooved that night, yes.
Let's groove tonight.
I was saying to Mateo, in the middle of the show, and they even said, they were like, hey, we're going to play some deep tracks here. And they played some deep tracks. And anything they play, like any of their instrumentals, you're like, this is awesome. But at the end, they didn't do the encore nonsense. At the end, they were just like, okay, we're going to close out the show. Hit, 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 hit. You're like, that one, that one, that one. Like, holy crap. They're so good. Still, so good. And they've added some people who are really good.
God, I like those old school groups. And when the younger generation, like between my son's age and middle 30s, they hear some of the hits, I didn't know that was that song. There's a new song out. Something Sugar. I can't remember who it is. Is it Kendrick or is it? There's a new song out, and the bass line and the line that he uses in there is a song from the late 70s, early 80s, O'Brien, I'm Sexy. I can't remember the name of the song right now. I'm going to find it. But, Jordan tried to play it for me. I had to let him know.
Let's talk a little football. Lots of college football, some NFL. Caleb Herring, our football insider on Mondays, of course, a former Rebel. He's the co-host of the Dan Mullen radio show. All right, quick timeout. We'll come back. We'll reset. Let's take a timeout here, and we'll get Caleb Herring on Cofield and Company.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rebels defense, UNLV Rebels, amongst the West and Mountain time zone teams. Air Force dead last at 37-3. A game being allowed on defense. UNLV right there with them at 33-4. So that's what the bye week was all about. That's what a lot of the press conference today with Dan Mullen was about. Meanwhile, at the top of the conference and the top of the defensive rankings is San Diego State, allowing just 10.4 points per game. Well, New Mexico is the opponent this week, and let's get into the Lobos as Caleb Herring is up with us. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man? Mount West football. It's getting crazy. We all knew it was coming, but here we go.
So, you know, it was funny. Press conference today, and I saw a lot of media members and content creators just annihilating Paul Gunther, and in turn Dan Mullen, like, get rid of him just because he's your friend, get rid of him. Not one question about Paul Gunther until one fella at the very end, 10 questions in, finally said, hey, people have been killing Paul Gunther, you know, how do you feel about that? That was me. What do you think Gunther did this week? And I will tell you, Dan Mullen made it sound like he was very much involved in film study with the defense and talked a lot about accountability and, again, assignment football.
I think this bye week, probably more than the past bye weeks, was spent identifying self-inflicted wounds and, like, where you can improve, like what the techniques are that are wrong that need to be fixed in order to make the system work. We talked a little bit about it last week, and I think there's some technical issues with what you're asking players to do that maybe just isn't aligning, especially when in the heat of battle, the fatigue sets in, the mental focus isn't as sharp. It's easier to lag off on some of the techniques and the keys that you're supposed to be reading, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this week more than the previous weeks, and I how they use the other two bye weeks, there's been a few bye weeks, I think there was opponents that you wanted to prepare for and try to game plan for. So maybe a little bit more emphasis on the, you know, future opponents in the previous bye weeks. But I think this being the last one, I think I would guess that it was probably more of an internal discussion, diagnosing the issues on the defensive side, especially, but on both sides of the ball. Obviously defense got the brunt of the focus because of what happened over the last two games. It's not a surprise to me to hear Dan Mullen saying that he's been more intimately involved with the defensive side during this bye week. Will that stay consistent for the remainder of the season? I don't know. No, you're fine. You're fine.
Sorry, Caleb. I asked you last week on a lot of the gaping holes on the runs by Boise State, was it defensive line or was it linebackers not scraping down? And they have made a change at linebacker. It doesn't mean that one guy's going to play. McDuffie will be out there for 50-plus plays. It doesn't mean anyone else will. But they did, on the depth chart, and it's funny, on the offensive depth chart, it was like all oars. On the defensive depth chart, they have moved Bryce Edmondson, the Memphis transfer, who started out the season hurt, has looked good. He is in a starting linebacker role now ahead of Alu Alu Tuilamotu.
And I think if you the rep count, and you can quote me on this, you could check me on this, I think his rep count in game has already surpassed Blessing in that regard. Like, he's been on the field that much as of late. So obviously they've seen something on film that allows him to pull the trigger. It might just be his health, and maybe this was the intention all along, is to get him into that starting lineup or at least in that rotation. So pulling any trigger that you can to try to figure it out. And again, maybe his skill set from his knowledge base just fits a little bit better with what Gunther's asking his linebacking core to do. That could be the case. I do think if you can, and we've talked about the depth on defense all season long, and I do think when you can create depth, even if that's not the answer to fix things, if that doesn't magically say, okay, we're playing much better now because we made that lineup change, you still add depth because you know Blessing's capable. You know Marcel McDuffie's capable. You know these guys you can trust, especially in spot rotations, to get out there and make the plays that they need to make from their spot. So I think this may be a way to generate some depth as well in the long run. But it's one of those things. I think pulling those kind of triggers and making those kind of switches, if nothing else, puts a fire under guys that you know are talented but are just having mental mistakes and mental lapses through the course of a 60-minute game.
It's kind of interesting, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, and we'll get the video out later on. I thought another thought-provoking part of Mullen's press conference today, he suggested, again, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think this is what he was getting at, that maybe some of the things they read in practice about how this defense performed against the UNLV offense, maybe they misread it because the offenses they're going against are much different than Dan Mullen's offense. Like, have you seen that happen where, you know, you're good on good in practice sometimes doesn't really indicate maybe some of where your weaknesses actually are because they're not seeing the offensive schemes and the changes from those teams that they're seeing in practice?
I've been a part of teams that where that was the case. There was a year and it's actually going into my senior year, actually, when now that I think about it, where our defense just had our number on offense. Like, we couldn't move the ball. We couldn't get completions. They just had our number anytime we go 7-on-7 or team drills like that. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I think, one, there's familiarity. So defenses play a lot faster against offenses they're familiar with. So, obviously, if you've been going against your defense for a whole offseason, by the time fall camp comes around, they're going to be playing basically at full speed. And it's a lot harder as an offense when a defense is playing like that. But number two, and this could be a bigger issue when you have such a roster turnover and there's so much open competition on one side of the ball, there's a natural inclination to cheat the drill. And I think that's one of the worst things you can have in practice, especially when practices are scripted. You're trying to get a look at a certain thing. But having good-on-good competition only works if it's blind competition. You only really get the indication of who's the best when you have blind competition. A lot of times, and I'm going to point the finger right at the defensive guys, a lot of times defensive players, in order to look good in practice or to make plays in practice, they anticipate the calls. They anticipate what the offense like to do. They know who the guy is. They know what the offense is trying to create out of this formation. So you get a lot of guys that jump the drills and jump the routes. And anticipate the run calls, et cetera, because they hear it at the line of scrimmage and they just know it. I don't know that to be the case with UNLV, but the conditions for UNLV with the transfer portal, with the new coaching staff, all the competition at every position group essentially that was going on the defensive side, I think there may have been a natural inclination to be more familiar with your team. And then the translation into week-to-week game prep just hasn't been there for that group of guys. That's a very, very real possibility when you're talking about the technical aspect of the scheme just not working right now.
Caleb, could we see one of the solutions to help the defense, which, by the way, in back-to-back games allowed 56 and 48, could we see them just simply getting more help from the offense, which is a very pass-heavy offense, although last game I was looking at the split and it was actually 30 pass attempts and 40 runs. Should they be running the ball even more now that it looks like they've got a three-headed monster at running back led by Jet Thomas and now Jalen Glover is healthy? Just help the D by possessing the ball more, although they do possess the ball a lot with that pass game, but should they be running more and keeping the D off the field?
I think there's always complementary football. And that should always be at the forefront. And I think you mentioned, I think UNLV actually has done a good job of possessing the football offensively. They can be explosive at times and have those quick hitter drives, but they've had double digit times this year where they've had the ball for 7 minutes. You know, it's like they have the ability as an offense to just stay on the field. Their third down efficiency is above average. So they can put together methodic drives. I don't know that you want to be in, that intentional about it, because I think you there's other answers out there. The offense putting up 30 points a game, I think time of possession, actually, I think they won Boise State. There's a point in the fourth quarter I looked up in time of possession. You know, if you actually own the time of possession game. And the scoreboard did not reflect that. So there's only so much you can do offensively. And the main objective is to score points and score touchdowns. I think you'll see a more aggressive UNLV UNLV offense in the red zone in terms of trying to come over with touchdowns because of their knowledge of the defensive woes. But I don't think you really have to change. I think the offense is actually doing what it's supposed to, especially when they struck that balance in the run and pass. But I do think you want to try to be cognizant of the defense. More importantly for the offense is you can't have the lulls where you go back-to-back three and outs and make it even more difficult for your defense who's on the field in those spurts of the game to just be completely dead on offense. Like the third quarter for UNLV this against Boise was really where the offense stymied and couldn't figure things out. So you just want to avoid those dry spells at all costs. And that could mean more conservative play calling during those stretches just to make sure you get some first downs instead of trying to take deep shots on first down.
Speaking with Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback and now the voice, along with Matt Everett on the broadcast and the coaches show. So I'm not sure if you saw. I don't know if you went. There was a pretty impressive turnout at Allegiant for the HBCU game. Can the Rebels match that? And how have you been impressed with the turnouts this season in
Uh-oh.
Terms of the vibe and the energy?
Oh, boy. let's see. The turnout for UNLV has been better than years past in terms of, and this is for the last two seasons, really, in terms of the consistent fan base that's out there. The energy level at the stadium a lot of the times is really electric. And UNLV's put on a good show, nail biters, at home so far this year. So there's been a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz in Allegiant Stadium. Now, I will say that I'm not going to rip the fans. I could, but I've accepted that UNLV has a loyal community of active people who are at Allegiant Stadium on a consistent basis. And I'd say that number, if I had to ballpark it, probably 27 to 28,000 that I feel like are going to be there, rain or shine.
Hold on. Let me interject real quick before you keep going, because I know you – and hold that thought.
Okay.
I want to interject real quick and make a point that Steve Cofield, Willie Ramirez, Caleb Herring, whoever it may be, whenever this topic comes up, make sure you're aware we're not ripping the UNLV fans because you're the one showing up. What we're talking about is the people that aren't showing up. A lot of people get offended when this topic comes up. They're like, what are you talking about? 27,000, 30,000? Yeah, well, yeah, you're doing your part. Caleb's about to bring up the point of the people that aren't showing up.
Yeah, bury the lead there. No, let's get foreshadowing, but that is exactly the point. There's 28,000 fans that I don't think it's fair for me to rip. Like you said, I don't want to make it seem like Rebel Nation is who I'm at. Rebel Nation has a solid core. I think what UNLV is struggling with is that fringe market that gets you over the hump to create loyal fans in addition to the ones that you already have. It just hasn't happened yet. And the theory was, if you win, they'll come. And UNLV's been winning for the last two seasons, and I still think that the gist of it is still the same. I don't think UNLV as a program has moved the needle in terms of fan base attendance on Saturdays. And it's part of the issue with just the nature of Las Vegas. It's an economic thing. It's a socioeconomic thing. However you want to demographically slice it, there's not a lot of people that are willing to commit on these busy college football Saturdays. To commit with all the other shows going out, saving up for the Raiders tickets, whatever the case may be, whatever the reason is, it's going to be hard to draw those fringe people out on a consistent basis to get to a $34,000 average on the season. I think it should be more. Vegas is a big city with a college town. I mean, we've 3 million plus. You can't really find many college institutions that live in a city that are call home a city that has that big of a population. And for UNLV to not get to 35,000 on a consistent basis, I think is a shame, but I think there's creative ways to fix it. And again, not to the 27,000 that are loyal, that are faithful, that are there all the time, but the people that are on the fringe, rightfully so, that maybe would go and would support UNLV, but find other options on Saturdays. I think that's who the target market needs to be, and that's who I'm talking to. You guys get there. Everybody else is already coming. Keep cheering loud. Keep being there and supporting UNLV. But everybody else, there's no better show in town right now for the price that you're getting at UNLV with that experience. It's something that you got to be a part of. Get everybody out there if you can.
It's the casuals. That's how they push it to 40 or 45,000 a game. But I will tell you, coaches notice. And I do think it is one of the reasons, not the only reason, that Barry Odom left. Barry Odom's got a two-win team in West Lafayette, Indiana, and they had 50,000 plus for a game against another bottom feeder, I hate to say it, Rutgers. Fans show up. I know this, New Mexico coach Jason Eck, he notices, and he's going to be a candidate at a lot of jobs. Coaches notice if the market is really embracing the football program, and it also adds to the potential of a football program. James, do me a favor here. Can you play the Jason Eck cut where the beginning, one of the media members asked about doing it for the fans, and then he starts to make this analogy about getting dumped.
For UNM fans and all that, I mean, how important was it to just get them that win, get them that sense of catharsis?
You know, we kind of got dumped, you could say. So I think we did a good job of showing that wasn't the case today. You know, we're looking pretty good. We're doing pretty good. We're not missing you.
Yeah, we're not missing you. Because he noticed. Like, they had a gigantic crowd a couple games before that. They ran into a little trouble. They come back. By the way, they're going against freaking Bronco Mendenhall, the coach that snubbed them. And there's very few fans there. So, Caleb, coaches do notice. It's not a threat. It's just reality now in college football when there's going to be a lot of folks banging on Mountain West Conference doors to grab coaches.
I think it's absolutely a real thing. Like, coaches notice the atmosphere in the community and in the stadiums. Home field advantage is a real thing. Look at Boise. I think they have a tracker on how many false starts or procedure snaps that they force as a fan base, and they take pride in that. That's a luxury to have as a coach. And you talk about getting pulled out of a program. If the fan base is loyal and the fan base is consistent and they show up and they create the atmosphere, it's an additional factor in the decision to leave or not to leave. And I agree with you. Barry Odom, I think, is from a place, and he went to a place, where football tradition supersedes wins and losses. And I think if you require a winning program to show up, now I'm not going to say be losers for decades, but if you require winning to be a standard before you can attend the game, I don't think that you're demonstrating the loyalty that these crazed fans, the fanatics, what fan actually stands for, actually are about. There's people that will sell out stadiums. There's communities that will sell out stadiums regardless of the team's winning or not because they love their team. And I don't think we have that, at least to fill allegiance adequately on a consistent basis yet here in Las Vegas. And be aware, it is a factor. When you have a head coach that has to beg for a good turnout, for a Big Ten opponent coming into town, that's not a good look for your program, for the fan base. And I'm going to speak directly to the fan base. It's not a good look for that to be the case, that a coach has to go out and beg for people to come to the games on Saturday when they are winning. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth. It is a factor, and coaches are taking notice of it throughout the season.
You know who else notices? Students, student athletes. So when all you want to do is complain about players and being self-centered and spoiled and the transfer portal, well, if they're going to go to a college town and transfer out because there's so much more to offer in those college towns, especially when it comes to support and NIL money, then do something to back them.
Caleb Herring's with us here on this Monday. Yep. Caleb, real quick here.
Yeah, I was going to say, who else notices? The recruits. I think in an age where transfer portals and incoming recruits can make or break you, a recruit coming from a Power 5 is going to look at some of these, like New Mexico's audience, and be like, I don't want to play in that environment. It goes hand in hand. Everybody notices.
Yeah, I've been to Boise a lot of times, and man, that, I'll tell you what, a couple weeks ago, that crowd, it was jam-packed. Those people are crazy. They love Boise football, and they fill that place. In the NFL, I'm sure you saw the Justin Fields Jets post game where he was talking about sitting in his closet crying about, just kind of dealing with pressure. He said he can handle it, but they really needed a win. I thought that was kind of cool that he opened up.
I think it was. I think the first thing I'll say, just a moment of levity, is that I'm sure his closet's massive. So it's not like he was cramped up in there.
It's all squeezed.
But, yeah, it would, but the vulnerability of a quarterback, a starting quarterback in that moment who has struggled, and I think it makes it even more impactful that he's handled his struggle throughout his NFL career with such grace and kind of suffered in silence for a lot of it, the criticism and his journey from the Bears to now, the Steelers even. I think him bearing that burden and that suffering in silence, and then for him to speak out on it in this moment, I think it makes it even more impactful. I'm glad he did. I'm glad he got the win. I'm personally a fan of Justin Fields. I'm not going to say he's the greatest quarterback of all time. I'm not going to do anything. He's got to perform. He's got to play like everybody else. But I'm a fan of him for that reason and for the way he's handled himself as a professional. It's good to see him win and kind of good to see him get that monkey off his back and really celebrate and then open up in that way.
You know, the Panthers were playing pretty decent football until yesterday. And then James Cook was the beast.
Yeah, and this is, I think, the formula for the Bills' success. And we saw it last year, and it makes you kind of scratch your head at why that wasn't the goal of this season. And it all kind of suddenly turned back to Josh Allen and him being the one in Buffalo. I think you have a big enough sample size. You paid Cook the money for him to be the feature of the offense. And it makes the team better when that's the case. It's just the way their roster is constructed. Cook and that offensive line are where you should butter your bread, so to speak. But he had a monster game. He's on one of my fantasy teams, so I was thrilled. His total, complete big play capability changes games. And I think if you have a consistent run game at any level of football, it should be the front runner in your offense, even if you have a guy like Josh Allen who's super talented. But he had a breakout day, and good for him and good for the Bills. I think the AFC is going to be interesting when all the teams hit their stride at the same time.
If you were Joe Brady in the NFL, would you take the LSU, the Florida, the Penn State job, or just wait for an NFL job to open up? Where would you want to coach with the current atmosphere in college football?
Well, I think being around, and I know he has college football experience in the past and obviously some big time success in college. But I think we've seen as the game has rapidly evolved on both levels, really, but especially in college, and the systems in place in college are very different from when he left it, let's say. So I think we've seen enough of a sample size of NFL coaches trying to make the jump back down to college or just going to college, and it's not looking good for that transition right now. I think that's a lot of pressure to go down to LSU, especially in the wake of Brian Kelly's firing, and take that on as a head coach. So I would stay put in the NFL and look for my opportunity in the NFL, because I think the NFL openings are going to start here in a bit as well. I know Miami got a win, but I think that spot's going to open up as a head coaching job. There's a couple spots that I think for sleepers. I think the Ravens job is not as secure as it has been in years past. So there's some potential, I think, for some movement in the head coaching ranks in the NFL. So I'd stay put if I was him.
Caleb Herring talking football here on a Monday on ESPN Las Vegas, but I got to squeeze in some NBA. More impressive to start this season, Wemby, Cooper Flagg?
This is tough. From a basketball aspect, I think Wembanyama. I think what he's able to do on the court and actually impact the game. I think the Spurs have figured out personnel a little bit more than Dallas, so we haven't really got to see Cooper Flagg in his true role and what he will be for the Mavericks team. Starting that point guard in the beginning of the year was just a failed experiment. But I think Wembanyama, from a talent perspective, I will say, though, that Cooper Flagg is having an enormous impact in the Dallas community. Anytime you can get the national anthem altered, and by that, I mean, during the national anthem in Dallas on the home games, they are now similar to what Golden Knights fans do when the Knights part is, and everybody yells Knights. They're doing that with Cooper Flagg when that our flag was still there. The whole crowd says Flagg. So I think he's having an enormous impact, too. He's an impressive player. I just think he and the Mavericks need to figure out the system and the structure of the personnel before he really can take off. But he's showing glimpses for sure. But I'm giving a nod to Wembanyama. He's proven why he's once in a generation, maybe once in a lifetime, as far as what he's able to do on the court.
Did you see this stat through their first two games before Dallas played its third? In each of their first two games of the regular season, Luka Doncic generated more points, rebounds, and assists, 132, than Anthony Davis, Cooper Flagg, Klay Thompson, and Derek Lively combined. They combined had 127.
I mean, that's too crazy to think about. I think it makes sense with Luka's usage. He has the ball in his hands all the time. All the guys that you mentioned for the Mavericks are not ball dominant players. So
still five players.
Kind of the structure of Russell.
Four.
It's still five players. One basketball. There's only one basketball, but I think the problem with Luka is, and this is a dim, I think he dominates the ball too much. But he comes through when he does. He makes the plays. He puts up the numbers and puts you in a position to win. So you really can't knock it too much. It's just my brand of basketball, not preferred. But that is an outstanding, I guess, individual effort. And it's kind of why the trade was looked at so negatively when you got rid of Luka, because you're basically looking at one roster spot. You traded away five productive members, basically, of a team for Luka. So that's insane.
Caleb, appreciate it. See you on Thursday at the Dan Mullen Radio Show.
All right, guys. Enjoy the rest of the night.
There he is, Caleb Herring, right here on ESPN Las Vegas. In just a little bit, we're going to check in with the boss of the book at Boomer Sportsbook. That's the sportsbook here at Ellis Island, and of course, at Casino Valley Verde, Nevada-only sportsbook, a couple of spots in northern Nevada. But if you come on down, you sign up for the account. Frankly, when you sign up for an account, you can do almost all of it, 95% at home. You just come in, deposit the money, and you'll get the deposit match bonus. And then once you're in, same game parlay bonuses. There's just bonuses all the time with Boomer Sportsbook. And right now they're dealing the best number on DGK to win the Stanley Cup in the entire city. So Nick Bogdanovich coming up. ESPN Las Vegas is Cofield and Company hanging. Monday Night Football, Willie's Party here at Ellis Island.
Now back to Cofield and Company for Monday Night Football at the Front Yard inside Ellis Island Casino on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's do it. Front Yard, Ellis Island. Get the shots. Get the shots. Willie, this is when you need to jump on the big mic here at the Front Yard. Start screaming shots.
Shots, 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 shots. Blue shots. Lemonade, they're giving free shots for every Dodger home run.
Every Dodger home run. Was that Teoscar Hernandez with a home run?
Yes, and I asked him, I said, what about the Blue Jays for Canadian whiskey or something? And no. Proximity to Vegas and L.A.
It's a Dodger house.
It's a Dodger
house. They had a Dodger watch party in game one.
Well, it looks like it again. There's a ton of fans because we got a table in front of us who said that they looked up the watch party and they came here specifically for NFL.
Good.
But we do have Dodger fans in the house. It just erupted, including Mateo. We have to tell him to sit down. He's still got 14 minutes of work to do.
I got the Dodgers for the series after game one at minus 120 here at Boomer Sportsbook. Nick Bogdanovich is in. Sorry, Nick. I'm going to win a lot of money from you. A lot of money.
I hope you do. We're rooting for the Dodgers as well.
Okay, there you go. There you go. Well, trust me, your football numbers, whether it was minus 105 or something in game, I got slaughtered. It was not – I don't know what it was like for the books because I feel like you guys probably did well on Saturday, but then again, the favorites killed it on Sunday in the NFL.
Yes, yeah, we had a really good Saturday, and Sunday the bettors got us, so it was pretty much a wash. But, incredible weekend of action with hockey and baseball, basketball, you know, the equinox. So October's insane for sports betting.
What was the split tonight, especially late action on Chiefs and Commanders?
Yeah, all the early professional money was on the Commanders. We opened KC 12.5. They took 12.5, 12, 11.5, and 11. And then at the end, there was finally some public Chief money. So I'm just getting off the golf course. It looks like a scoreless first. Is that even possible in the NFL?
Amazing, right? A total of 48. Everyone's expecting a highfalutin scoring game, and it is scoreless with a minute left, and the Chiefs have the ball on their own 34-yard line. All right, let's start looking ahead to Week 9 in the National Football League. Completely fascinating game between Baltimore and Miami. Can I get your feelings, first of all, as a sportsbook guy, longtime guy here in Vegas? Do you buy that John Harbaugh didn't kind of understand the rules about availability and status and all that? Because I think the NFL is really sassed, and the book should be kind of angry about that whole Lamar Jackson thing last week with the number.
Yeah, the Harbaughs are pretty sharp guys. So, you know, he's given us the runaround for sure. Everyone thought Lamar was 100% to go, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. But they still ended up getting getting the cash. So the Raven fans did get who took a lead with Lamar coming back, still got paid out. But this is a good game against the Dolphins. The Dolphins went into Atlanta, and Atlanta's a good team at home, and they thoroughly dismantled them, which was scary because Tua was about to be benched and McDonald was about to be fired. So all of a sudden the Dolphins look like a capable football team.
Let me ask you about the Saints, because here we see the second, third, fourth, fifth, however many weeks now, the Sharps are on the Saints. Now, we all know coming into the season, back in August, when it was the question mark on who was going to be QB1, everyone talked about this was going to be the worst team in football. They had the worst quarterback room. Is there something to be said where the Sharps look at a team going into the season, everybody's perception as to what the worst team in football could be, so they automatically know the public fade, so, hey, they'll get the first number, the books are going to come out, so the Sharps play the Saints, knowing possibly that number's going to, I mean, because we've seen this number driven down, they just want to automatically be against the public. Is that the case with the Saints this year? Because they're getting 13.5 against the Rams, and I got news for you. If that number dips like it did last week, I'm laying the points with the Rams.
Yeah, I can't blame you. There's two teams all year long that have taken huge, huge money, and that's the Jets and the Saints. They bet them every week, and they don't wait till the very end on Sunday when the public's already bet against them to maybe get a higher number. They just start betting early in the week. They can't get enough of the Jets or the Saints. And finally, they got there with the Jets, which it took a miracle because they were down 14 in the fourth. But the Jets, they keep coming up dry, and at some point, you would think that it would change their betting pattern. But, yeah, no, who could watch the Saints the last month and want to bet against bet the Saints against the Rams? The Rams are coming off a bye, getting Puka back, and they're a real football team. I don't understand it.
Betting the Saints is like taking a drill to a tooth nerve. That would be or watching them, let alone betting them. All right, let's go on to Sunday. Chicago -1.5 at the Bengals.
Yeah, interesting game. Obviously, the Bengals have the worst defense in the free world, and he, especially when Hendrickson goes out. At least when he's in there, he gives them at least a pass rusher. But and the Bears, the Bears couldn't beat Huntley. So Bears did have 4 wins in a row against weaker competition, but they couldn't handle a backup quarterback in Baltimore. But we opened 1.5. I think we're still in that same general area. Interesting game. I don't know what to make of Caleb Williams. There's times where he looks like he's, that overall number one pick, and there's times he looks absolutely terrible. So I really wish I had an opinion one way or the other on him, but I don't.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It wouldn't surprise me in a few years, Nick, if Caleb Williams will be what we're seeing from Daniel Jones, where he moves on from them, he gets moved, and all of a sudden he thrives in a different situation like we're seeing with Daniel Jones in Indianapolis. We're speaking with Nick Bogdanovich, the big boss at Boomers. I like to call him the legend. San Francisco at the Giants. Giants get bad news. Cam Scataboo has to have surgery on his ankle. Frisco looks like laying 3.
I think we lost him.
I'm here.
Well, we're not
here.
Can
you hear me?
Did we lose the legend?
He hung up. He was insulted.
He was insulted.
Like, that's not
guys,
nice
can
enough.
You hear me?
Yeah,
there
we got you.
Can
we got
hear
you.
Me?
Did your cheek accidentally hit the mute button?
No, but yeah, you're right. Scataboo is much must watch. He was must watch in Arizona State. He's much watched in the NFL. And let's face it, he plays reckless. I shouldn't say reckless. He just throws his body around. And he knows injury's coming at some point. It's unfortunate it happened, but he's just a great watch. He'll be back, but I have a feeling he'll have like a 4 or 5 year really good career, and then his body's just going to give out. But, yeah, the 49ers got manhandled. Houston absolutely manhandled him down. I mean, it was a obliteration, really, a one-way game. Houston's defense is super good. It's really good at home. And C.J. Stroud is always halfway respectable at home, so I do think you'll get a better a 49er effort against a softer Giant defense. So I do think Frisco will go in there and rebound and get this one done.
Looks like you've taken some money in on the Patriots at home against the Falcons.
little bit. I'm betting Penix plays this week. I think they held. I'm pretty sure it was a. They probably could have rushed him out this week, but they thought they could beat the Dolphins without him, and they're probably living to regret it. So I do think Michael Penix will be back, and obviously he makes a pretty big difference because I think Kirk Cousins has seen his better day. But man, this New England team—they just—they're really good. Vrabel's got them believing they can win, and Drake May's playing at a high level, so it's going to be a really good game. I think we got the game around 5.5.
Yep.
But I like to bet bad teams coming off bad performances. I think that's how you succeed in this league. You can't do it blindly, but you can certainly look to pick your spots.
Well, a team coming off a bad performance and a collapse last night, Pittsburgh hosting the Indianapolis Colts, who many believe are now the best team in the AFC.
Tell you one thing. I was one of the guys late to the party because I thought the Indianapolis was overrated. They're beating up on weaker teams, and maybe so. Their schedule maybe has played out well for them, but they are really, really good. I mean, we know how good Jonathan Taylor is when he stays healthy, and he looks like a man amongst children. Daniel Jones is making plays, and their defense, even though they've lost a good key piece or two, they still keep making plays. So I'm through burning money against the Colts. I've done it too many times.
Nick Bogdanovich, before we get you out of here, I want you to tell the audience about Boomers with the same game parlay bonuses and also betting insurance.
Yeah, we'll pick out a game a week, in the 3 or 4 point range. And if you bet that team and they win and don't cover, you'll get your money back. So that's a nice little promo. And our main promo is -105 in all NFL regular games. If you bet straight, you know how much that juice can really add up at $1.10. So check us out at Ellis Island or Casino Valley Verde. You can lay $1.05 in the NFL.
Nick, you're the man. We appreciate it, buddy.
All right, guys. Enjoy your evening.
There he is, Nick Bogdanovich. Remember, Ellis Island, not only a great place to watch and bet the games and get the great food here at the Front Yard, it's also going to be Halloween headquarters on Friday night. They're going to have live DJs, costume contests, karaoke. Oh, I might come down for that. I'm going to do the Monster Mash. I'll do karaoke Monster Mash. Drink specials,
no.
Giveaways. They got three venues with three different contests. Front Yard, Best Group Costume at 9:30. The Deck. If you haven't been to the Deck yet, oh, my Lord. You got to see this build out up top, and it's going to be a freaking superstar during F1. That one goes down at 11 o'clock with Best Couple and Most Glamorous. And then in the Karaoke Lounge, 12:30. Scariest costume, funniest costume, best overall. Prizes in all three venues here. So Friday, this is the spot to be, Ellis Island.
And you know what else you could do if you come down here for that? You watch the Golden Knights because they're an afternoon game at home. If you come down here for karaoke and you don't do Thriller and you and the SO do the whole video, and then I don't know what you're wasting.
I stuck with an old song in Monster Mash. I think I can do that voice, and it's pretty simple.
All right, well,
and I might dress up as the Bride of Frankenstein.
All right, well,
I like that wig.
Let's not jump ahead to Friday. And although you come down here for the party, we're partying tonight. I'm here from 6 to 8 at the Front Yard, and the drink specials, free shots, every Dodger bomb. So get down here. Plus, I got tickets to a bunch of UNLV events.
All you can eat menu, all you can drink if you want the spirits, or all you can drink beer. It's also a Mega Monday. There's four different mega drinks. What's a mega drink at the Front Yard? It's a 50-ounce drink. You get 2 for 1 on those. I wouldn't do two of them back-to-back yourself. That's a little crazy. But the all-you-can-eat menu is tremendous. They keep adding different items to it. And as Willie said, some great prizes, including 2 tops of the all-you-can-eat. We'll be giving those away before 8 o'clock. World Series and the Chiefs against the Commies, the Commanders. That one is scoreless right now. Thanks for listening to us back on Tuesday. But hang with Willie tonight.